Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this first Bitter Information webcast relating to New Jersey Electric Distribution Companies, or EDC's, proposal for the procurement of their basic generation service, or BGS load. My name is Paul Cardona, and presenting with me today is Rachel Northcutt. We are both from NERA, which is the BGS auction manager. We will answer any questions you have regarding the webcast at the end of the presentation. To ask questions, please locate the Q&A panel on the right-hand side of your screen, type in your question, and hit enter to submit that question. And before I go into the presentation, I'd like to read a disclaimer. Any statements herein describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by a reference to the governing documents, which are all the documents included in the EDC's July filing dated July 1, 2024. These documents are posted to the BGS proceeding page of the auction tab of the BGS auction website, which is www.bgs-auction.com. These documents include the EDC's joint proposal, the BGS CIAP and BGS RSCP provisional auction rules, the BGS CIAP and BGS RSCP supplier master agreements, and each EDC's company-specific addendum, including draft tariff sheets and pricing factors. Today, we'll discuss roles, give a broad overview of the EDC's July filing, discuss products and rates, provide an overview of bidding in the auctions, go over the auction itself, and then review the central source of information relating to the auctions, which is the BGS auction website. There are well-defined roles for the BGS auction manager, the EDCs, the board, and the board's consultant. The EDCs are responsible for elements of the proposal. The auction manager is responsible for carrying out auction promotional efforts, communicating information, organizing responses to bidder questions, and administering the auction in accordance with the auction rules as approved by the board. The board's consultant oversees the conduct of the auction and briefs the board during the auction process. The board monitors the auctions and reviews and renders a decision on the final auction results. The next section will be dedicated to an overview of the EDC's July filing. So the BGS auction process is designed to select the most effective portfolio managers to supply New Jersey's BGS customers at a cost in line with market conditions. The BGS auctions are designed to attract a diverse set of suppliers that bring the full gamut of supply strategies to bear on managing a BGS supply portfolio. Each BGS supplier is responsible for assembling its own portfolio of products that it believes will make the best bid and provide risk management services. There are certain regulatory milestones that happen prior to the deadline for submission of the Part 1 application that I list here on this slide. So final comments for the 2025 BGS proceeding were due on October 7th. The next major milestone is the board's decision on the EDC's proposal, and that is expected in November. The EDC has proposed two auctions, the BGS RSCP auction for procuring supply for residential and smaller commercial customers. Supply is procured on a rolling three-year basis so that customers at any given point are served supply procured through prices determined at three different auctions. The auction determines an all-in price in cents per kilowatt hour, and suppliers are paid this price for every kilowatt hour of load served. The auction, the second auction is the BGS CIP auction, to procure supply for larger commercial and industrial customers over a one-year supply period. The auction determines a CIP price in dollars per megawatt day that suppliers are paid based on their capacity obligation. Suppliers are paid for energy at the real-time hourly spot price, as well as a predetermined rate for ancillary services. In both auctions, supply is procured for all EDCs at once, so that each auction has four products where a product is the BGS load for a given EDC. Consistent with prior years, the auction format is proposed as a descending clock auction, which occurs over multiple rounds and where supply is procured for all EDCs at once. Over several rounds, bidders submit bids and receive information regarding those bids, and then bidders have an opportunity to bid again at a lower price in a subsequent round as prices tick down. Suppliers are able to make decisions using information they receive in the auction and are able to switch their bids from one EDC to another or remove bids from the auction. A single price is determined for each EDC in an auction when the amount of bids falls below the amount needed for each of the EDCs. Aside from the EDC's responsibility for transmission, BGS suppliers will continue to have load serving responsibility for BGS loads. BGS suppliers will be physically and financially responsible for the hour-by-hour provisions of the electricity for New Jersey's BGS customers. The full requirement service will continue to include capacity, energy, ancillary services, as well as obligations to fulfill New Jersey's Renewable Portfolio Standards, or RPS, and other services that PJM may require. The basic structure and terms of the standard contract has been maintained from prior years. The standard contract for the BGS RCP auction also maintains capacity proxy price supplements in line with each BGS RCP auction since 2020. As in prior years, during the application process, BGS suppliers must agree to the terms of the standard contract that is approved by the board, and those terms are non-negotiable. New for the 2025 BGS SMAs is a requirement that suppliers must meet PJM LSC requirements and provide PJM short names to the EDCs by May 1st, 2025. Note that it has always been the case that suppliers meet PJM LSC requirements. The change relates to the date short names must be provided to the EDCs. I'll continue a little bit more about the capacity proxy prices. So in each BGS proceeding since 2020, the board approved the use of capacity proxy prices as the actual capacity prices for some delivery years in the various supply periods were not known prior to those auctions. The EDCs again proposed to set capacity proxy prices this year for energy year 27 and energy year 28, to the extent that the capacity prices for those energy years are not known at least 5 business days prior to the start of the BGS RCP auction. Under the supplements in the proposed BGS RCP SMA, the BGS RCP supplier would be paid or would pay the difference between the rate that the supplier pays for its capacity and the capacity proxy price for each of energy year 27 and energy year 2028. The EDCs propose a market-based design rate design that reflects auction prices and that would be approved in advance by the board. Consistent with auctions since 2021, transmission is removed from the BGS supplier responsibilities, and all EDCs show a separate transmission charge to customers. BGS RCP rates are determined by auction prices, while BGS CIP rates are determined by the final CIP price for an EDC, which a customer pays based on its capacity obligation. BGS CIP customers also pay for other components of supply separately. We are coming up on several important deadlines for postings and comments processes prior to the Part 1 application deadline. I'll go over into a little bit more detail on the comment process for the letters of credit on the next slide, for which the deadline to propose modifications is October 29th, 2024. Another date that I'll flag here is the announcement of the minimum and maximum starting prices, which is set to occur on November 15th. So bidders may, but are not required to comment on the draft pre-auction letter of credit and post-auction letter of credit that were posted to the contract and credit page of the BGS auction website on October 10th. The EDC will use an electronic pre-auction letter of credit and a hard copy document is not used. The deadline for the submission for comments on the draft letters of credit is due Tuesday, October 29th, and not during the application process. I'll now spend some time describing the BGS product as well as BGS rates before passing the presentation to Rachel. BGS suppliers are load serving entities for a percentage of an EDC's load broken down into tranches. An EDC's total BGS load is equal to the total retail load in an EDC's territory minus load served by third-party suppliers. Any EDC's BGS CIP load consists of BGS load served at a transmission voltage as well as the load associated with larger commercial customers with a peak load contribution of 500 kW or greater. An EDC's BGS RCP load is equal to an EDC's total BGS load minus an EDC's BGS CIP load. As always, BGS customers are free to come and go from BGS. The BGS RCP load is broken down into tranches. A tranche is a fixed percentage of BGS RCP load for an EDC that represents approximately 100 megawatts on an eligible basis and approximately 5,300 megawatts statewide on an eligible basis. We provide in the table on this slide the current PLS, tranche targets, tranche sizes, and megawatt measures for the 2025 BGS RCP auction. BGS RCP rates are based on auction prices, which determine an average cost for an EDC. These rates are both seasonally adjusted and tranche weighted based on the auction prices from the 3 auctions covered by a delivery year. A ratio translates average cost into a rate for a particular class. All classes have seasonal rates. Some classes also have time of day rates. Customers will also pay an EDC specific transmission charge. BGS RSVP suppliers assume the risks of providing full requirement service to New Jersey's BGS RSVP customers. The full requirement service will continue to include capacity, energy, ancillary services, as well as obligations to fulfill New Jersey's RPS and other services that PJM may require. BGS RSVP suppliers are responsible for evaluating and managing the risks associated with providing BGS RSVP load, including migration risks, load and weather risks, changes to the class composition, change to the rate design, and change to New Jersey's RPS. For their role, BGS RSVP suppliers are paid the final auction price for an EDC for each kilowatt hour of load served. As mentioned earlier in the presentation, the EDCs propose the use of capacity proxy prices for the 2027 and 2028 delivery years or energy years, consistent with their use in the contract since the 2020 BGS RSVP auction. The provisions relating to capacity proxy prices are found in supplements to the BGS RSVP SMA. In a delivery year associated with a capacity price, suppliers may be paid or would pay the difference between the rate paid by BGS RSVP suppliers for capacity and PJM and the capacity proxy price for that delivery year. Similar to BGS RSVP load, BGS CIP load is broken down into tranches. These tranches represent approximately 75 megawatts on an eligible basis and approximately 2,700 megawatts statewide on an eligible basis. We provide in the table on this slide the peak load shares, tranche targets, tranche sizes, and megawatt measures for the 2025 BGS CIAP auction. BGS CIAP customer rates are determined on the final CIAP price determined at the auction, which customers pay based on their capacity obligation. BGS CIP customers are also responsible for the real-time hourly spot price for energy, a predetermined ancillary services rate, and an EDC-specific transmission charge. BGS CIP suppliers assume the risks of providing full requirement service to New Jersey's BGS CIP customers. BGS CIP suppliers are responsible for evaluating and managing the risks associated with providing BGS CIP load, including migration risk, ancillary service cost risk, as well as changes to New Jersey's RPS. For their role, BGS CIP suppliers are paid the CIP price, the CIP standby fee, the real-time hourly spot price for energy, and predetermined rates for ancillary services. Lastly, BGS suppliers are responsible for fulfilling the obligations of New Jersey's RPS, including Class 1, Class 2, and solar requirements. Suppliers must register into GATS and be able to transfer RECs and SRECs to the EDCs. Please note that suppliers are also responsible for meeting the requirements of New Jersey's Transition Incentive Program and Successor Solar Incentive Program. Suppliers, while they're responsible for those programs, suppliers do not pay for transition renewable energy credits for TRECs or SREC2s arising from the Successor Solar Incentive Program. Instead, TRECs and SREC2s are retired to the administrator's GATS accounts, and then the statewide Class 1 requirement is reduced on a one-to-one basis. And with that, I'll pass the presentation to Rachel to finish the rest of the webcast today.
All right, thanks, Paul. Good morning, everyone. In this next section, I'll provide a little more information on bidding and the auctions. As Paul mentioned earlier in the presentation, the proposed format of the auctions is a clock auction, and specifically the format is a multi-product and multi-round design. What we mean by multi-product is that the tranches for all EDCs are procured at once, and what we mean by multi-round is that the auction proceeds in a number of rounds. And in a given round, the auction manager suggests prices for each of the EDCs, and suppliers state the number of tranches they're willing to supply at the suggested prices. If there is excess supply, meaning that there are more tranches that are bid than are needed in a given round, then the prices in the auction will tick down. And as the auction progresses, suppliers can switch their bids from one EDC to another in response to changes in price. This slide provides an example of the clock auction format from the perspective of the BGS RSCP auction. You see data here for two rounds, rounds 1 and 2. In round one, the price of 14.5 cents per kilowatt hour is the same across all EDCs. Just a note here that the prices in this example are illustrative, so it's not necessarily the case that the prices in round one will be the same across all EDCs in the actual auction. So at the prices shown here, suppliers would be asked to state the number of tranches they're willing to supply for each EDC. The number bid column gives the total number of tranches bid across all bidders for each EDC, and the number to buy column lists the target for each EDC, which is the number of tranches needed for that EDC. Excess supply is calculated as the difference between the number of tranches needed and the number of tranches bid for that EDC. In this example, the number of tranches bid for RICO is 1, and the number of tranches needed is also 1, so excess supply for RICO is 0. But the auction will not end for RICO, and that's because bidders have the ability to switch their bids from one EDC to another in subsequent rounds of the auction. So it's possible that in a later round, suppliers will switch back into RICO. And generally, the auction will end for all EDCs at the same time to allow the possibility of suppliers switching in any given round. In this example, there is excess supply in the auction, so the auction will move into round two, and the prices will tick down for each of the EDCs for which there is excess supply. In this case, the prices will tick down for PSE&G, JCP&L, and for ACE. The amount by which the prices will tick down depends on what's called the oversupply ratio, which is the ratio between the amount of excess supply that's actually on the EDC compared to the maximum excess supply that the EDC could have. And generally, the higher the oversupply ratio, the higher the excess supply, and the more the price will tick down for that EDC. With the new prices for round two, suppliers state the number of tranches they're willing to supply for each EDC, and we see that suppliers have switched their tranches around, so there are fewer tranches bid on PSE&G compared to round one, and now more tranches bid on JCP&L and RICO. There's now positive excess supply for all EDCs, so the prices for all EDCs will tick down this round. The process continues until there's no more excess supply on any of the EDCs, and at that point, the prices will not tick down any further, and those will be the final auction clearing prices for each EDC. I'll discuss here a few main features of the auction, one being that any offer presented in a round of the auction is binding. If a supplier has bid a number of tranches on an EDC in a round, and if the price for that EDC is not reduced in the next round, the bidder cannot reduce the number of tranches bid on that EDC. Also, the total number of tranches bid across all of the EDCs cannot increase. Bidders can switch their bids in a round and bid more tranches on one EDC, but to do so, they must decrease the number of tranches bid on another EDC. The third feature is one we've already touched on. It's that the auction closes on all EDCs at once. And in this way, winners in an auction are determined for all EDCs at once, and so are the auction clearing prices. And this brings us to the fourth feature. That's that all winners in an auction receive the same auction clearing price for that EDC in that auction. We've discussed that the auction features a multi-round design. Now, in a round, there are three phases: a bidding phase, a calculating phase, and a reporting phase. The bidding phase is the time allotted in a round where suppliers state the number of tranches they're willing to supply at the suggested price for each EDC. Once the bidding phase ends, the calculating phase begins, and this is when the auction manager tabulates the results of the round, as well as the next round's price for each EDC. Once these calculations are complete, the reporting phase begins, and bidders will then have access to the next round's price for each EDC. And at this time, bidders will also have access to an indication of the total excess supply in the auction for that round. Once the reporting phase ends, the bidding phase of the next round begins, and the cycle continues until the auction ends. A bid in the first round of an auction is relatively simple in that it's the number of tranches a supplier is willing to bid for each EDC. It is possible that the volume can be reduced in round one of an auction, but this would only be done if it is necessary to ensure the competitiveness of the bidding environment. Whether this adjustment is needed is decided on the basis of interest in the first round of bidding. If the volume must be reduced, then it is reduced in a way that will ensure that there is sufficient tranches bid for each tranche to be procured. In subsequent rounds, bidders can leave their bids unchanged, so they can bid the same number of tranches for each EDC that they did in the previous round. If a price for an EDC has ticked down, a bidder can reduce the number of tranches bid on that EDC by either withdrawing tranches and removing them from the auction, or by switching, which is bidding those tranches on one or several other EDCs. And remember here that a bidder cannot increase the total number of tranches it bids in the auction, but can only decrease the total number that it bids, or it can switch its bids among the EDCs. I mentioned that in the reporting phase of a round, bidders have access to various information on the results of that round. Bidders will have access to a report about the bidder's own bid from that round, but will not have access to information about any other bidder's bid. Bidders will also have access to the price for each EDC for the next round, as well as an indication of the total excess supply in the auction during that round. The example on this slide is from the perspective of the BGS CIEP auction and demonstrates some of the information provided to bidders in the reporting phase. You'll see in the second row of this table that after the results were tabulated in the calculating phase of round 5, the actual value of total excess supply in the auction was between 76 and 80 tranches. The auction closes on all EDCs at once when total excess supply is zero, and at this point, prices can no longer tick down. At the end of the auction, all winners for an EDC will receive the same auction clearing price for that EDC in that auction. Under the EDC's proposed process, once the auctions have closed, the board will render its decision on the auction results within 2 business days of the close of the last auction. The board does not have the option of rendering a decision on the results of each, the board does have the option of rendering a decision on the results of each auction at different times. If the board accepts the results of the auction, the EDCs and the winning suppliers must execute the SMAs within 3 business days of the board's decision. Additionally, any security required under the creditworthiness standards of the SMA is posted upon contract execution. In this next section, I'll provide an overview of the auction process. I'll also offer some general information on applying to participate in the auctions. All right, first, the board plays a key role in the auction process because the board has the final say on all aspects of the EDC's proposal. The board reviews the proposal and takes into consideration any comments from other stakeholders, as well as the EDCs, and then it determines whether the proposal is approved. And if it's approved, whether the proposal or any included documents require any changes. This means that the final approved versions of the auction rules, SMAs, and auction process may be different than what's presented here today. Following the board's decision on the EDC's proposal, if the board approves the EDC's proposal, the EDCs will make a compliance filing that will include the final auction rules and SMAs for the auction. These final documents will then be made available on the BGS website for bidders to review, but preliminary versions of these files that were included as part of the EDC's joint proposal are currently available on the BGS website. This slide lists some key dates that are to come after the board's decision. One is that following the board's decision, bidders will be able to begin submitting their application materials to become eligible to participate in the auctions. The Part 1 application is expected to be made available on December 3rd. And the deadline for bidders to submit their Part 1 application is December 17th at 12 p.m. Eastern. The Part 2 application will become available after the Part 1 window has closed, and bidders will need to submit their Part 2 application materials by January 15th. Bidders that successfully fulfill the requirements of the Part 1 and Part 2 applications will then be eligible to participate in the auctions in early February. Bidders can apply to participate in one or both of the BGS CIEP and the BGS RSCP auctions by completing the Part 1 and then the Part 2 applications. The Part 1 and Part 2 applications are submitted through two separate online forms that will be available at bgs-application.com. If you're a returning bidder, an email will be sent to you with instructions on how to activate your account to be able to access the online applications. You'll receive this activation email closer to when the Part 1 application becomes available. New bidders will need to request an account to access the applications in order to receive this activation email. In general, both the Part 1 and Part 2 applications will require bidders to provide various information, provide supporting documentation, and complete and upload additional files called inserts. Inserts are separate Microsoft Word files that applicants will need to complete and then upload to the online forms. Also, both the Part 1 and Part 2 applications will require bidders to make a number of certifications, including agreeing to the terms of the SMA and the auction rules. Again, the final versions of the auction rules and SMAs for purposes of making these certifications are filed to be in compliance with the board's decision on the BGS proposal. So the final versions of the auction rules and SMAs may be different, again, to what's presented today. Also, I'll point out that this year, bidders that are not yet PJM load serving entities or LSEs will be required to provide evidence with their Part 2 application that they've started the process to become qualified as a PJM LSE and that PJM has started its review of their application materials to do so. Again, this only applies to those bidders who, at the time of submitting the Part 1 application, do not yet meet PJM LSE requirements. This slide provides some of the different requirements of the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. For example, in the Part 1 application, bidders will provide contact information for the applicant, including information for an authorized representative and a set of additional nominees, and these individuals will be copied on all correspondence from the auction manager. Note here that there are no state licenses required to participate in the BGS auctions. However, a BGS supplier must be a load-serving entity in PJM before the start of the supply period. And applicants that are not yet BGS suppliers will need to show that they are either already an LSE or they must certify that nothing impedes them from becoming an LSE. And as I just mentioned, these bidders will be required to provide evidence with their Part 2 application that they've started the process to become qualified as a PJM LSE and that PJM has started its review of their application materials. Bidders also provide financial information and credit ratings in the Part 1 application that will be used to determine the amount and the type of pre-auction security a bidder must provide with its Part 2 application. Bidders will also need to provide the same information for their guarantor if they're choosing to rely on one. If a bidder satisfies all requirements of the Part 1 application, that bidder is said to be a qualified bidder. Only qualified bidders may submit a Part 2 application. In the Part 2 application, bidders must name an indicative offer, which is the number of tranches a bidder is willing to bid at the minimum and the maximum starting prices in each auction. Bidders must also provide pre-auction security with their Part 2 application. And this is provided in the form of a pre-auction letter of credit, and for some bidders, also a letter of reference from a bank or a letter of intent to provide a guarantee. The amount of pre-auction security is determined by a bidder's indicative offer at the maximum starting price that they submit in the Part 2 application. For the BGS CIEP auction, that amount is $375,000 per tranche. For the BGS RSCP auction, that amount is $500,000 per tranche, plus any additional pre-auction security that may be required depending on the credit information the bidder provided in its Part 1 application, and if that bidder is relying on a guarantor. If a bidder completes and satisfies the requirements of both the Part 1 and the Part 2 application, that bidder is said to be a registered bidder and is eligible to participate in the auctions. But ahead of submitting these application materials, bidders have the opportunity to review and propose modifications to the draft forms of the pre-auction and post-auction letters of credit. Bidders are welcome to provide comments to one or both the pre-auction and post-auction letter of credit. but any and all proposed modifications must be submitted to the BGS auction manager as redlined Microsoft Word files. The EDCs will review each proposed modification and either revise the standard form of the letter of credit, approve the use of the modification on an optional basis, or reject the proposed modification entirely. The deadline to submit proposed modifications to the letters of credit, as Paul mentioned, is October 29th, and any comments or proposed modifications should be sent to the BGS auction manager by email, and our email is bgs-auction@nira.com. Bidders proposing modifications will receive a response from the auction manager that will indicate which proposed modifications are acceptable to the EDCs and which are not, and this response will be sent on November 6th. On November 8th, the auction manager will post a list of all of the acceptable modifications to the letters of credit on the contract and credit page of the website. Bidders planning to rely on the financial standing of a guarantor should review the form of guarantee that's included as an appendix to the SMAs. Bidders with corporate policies preventing them from using the standard form of the guarantee may propose an alternate form of guarantee by participating in the alternate guarantee process. Bidders interested in participating in this process should send an email to the auction manager, and then we'll provide you additional information about requirements and deadlines. The deadline to express interest in this process is also October 29th. Please note that there are a number of minimum requirements for an alternate form of guarantee, and this list of requirements can be found on the contract and credit page of the BGS website. To wrap up today's presentation, I'll go over the BGS auction website, point out some additional resources for bidders considering participating in the auctions. First, our BGS website address is bgs-auction.com, and on this site, bidders can find the auction rules, the supplier master agreements, as well as a detailed calendar that lays out the auction timeline. We also have a contact us page where you can submit to us any questions you might have about the auctions, and also on this page, you can register to receive announcements about the auctions. Bidders also have access to various data located on the monthly data page and the additional data page, and this can be found on the data room tab of the website. Specifically, the EDCs make available aggregate data as well as BGS CIEP and BGS RSCP specific data, including hourly load and peak load allocation files. We also include switching statistics so bidders can see the amount of migration for each EDC when customers switch from taking BGS to taking service from a third-party supplier. Again, you may submit questions to the auction manager through the BGS website, but you can also send questions to us via email. Bidder questions and responses will be eventually posted to the BGS website on our FAQs page, but any sensitive or confidential information will be removed prior to posting. This last slide provides a number of other links to various pages on the PJM website, including their page regarding the reliability pricing model, as well as their page related to PJM GATS. And that concludes the presentation portion of this webcast.